This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. We're spending time talking with chancellors of higher education institutions here in Northwest Indiana. And we have with us now Purdue University Northwest Chancellor Thomas Kean. And Chancellor Kean, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Oh, thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're trying to find out how the past semester has gone and how the current semester is going so far. And, of course, it's being overshadowed, obviously, by the coronavirus pandemic. How did Purdue University Northwest do during the fall semester in the educational ways they could actually perform and how things are going so far?
Well, I think that everything went as well as could be expected. Because we had to end last spring semester virtually, I think that faculty and students were more prepared for the fact that we would not have a normal semester in terms of delivery of classwork. So everybody worked hard to make it happen. I would say that for those students who probably would normally struggle, it was probably a bigger barrier than usual.
Mm-hmm. Remind us again what had to be done on both campuses, Hammond and Westville. Once you had to kind of cut back for the spring semester, but you had to plan for the fall semester then, what steps did you have to take? What procedures did you have to put in place on both campuses to get things ready for fall semester and have a way to certainly educate as best as you could?
Well, certainly we had a university committee that did an amazingly great job in putting together steps to make sure that those people that were on campus were safe and were not spreading any virus should there be any contact. So the actual steps, people had to make sure that they didn't have a temperature, they didn't have any symptoms before they would come on campus if they were coming on campus. And, of course, everybody's masked, and we had separate entrances and exits just to keep the flow such that we could make sure that everybody was safely distanced. The result of which was that, you know, we had really very few cases reported by faculty, staff, and students. So I was very pleased with that. In terms of the faculty, they had some choices about how they would deliver their classes. Some did just pure online classes, while others decided to continue to lecture, but they lectured using Zoom or Brightspace. And then we had a number of hybrid classes where there would be some online and some face-to-face. This was particularly true in the sciences and engineering and technology where there are labs. Oftentimes the labs were live, but the lectures might have been done virtually. Mm-hmm. And we did have about 15% of our classes that were taught live and were able to do so for most of the semester.
That's good. How did the splitting things up, going to the hybrid mode for those science classes, for example, how did that seem to work out?
Well, it worked out well. We actually made sure that the labs only had about one-third of the students in them that they would normally have. But many, many of the labs already required the students to have PPE anyway. And so it seemed to work well. In fact, it worked so well that when we go back to face-to-face labs sometime this semester, we'll probably go to 50% because it worked so well.
That's good. We're talking with Purdue University Northwest Chancellor Thomas Kean about how the fall semester 2020 went for the university at both the Hammond and the Westville campuses. And now you had the opportunity, I'm sure, during the Christmas break to tweak things more, even more as you go into the spring semester. And you've already mentioned that you've been able to finding out how the labs went, that you'll be able to increase the number of people in the labs this time around.
Yes, absolutely. you know, really over the Christmas break, the biggest thing was a ray of sunshine because of the immunization. Our expectation is that, you know, by late April or mid-April, you know, we'll probably be fairly close to normal for those people who are wanting to go face-to-face. Mm-hmm. We will have some faculty, I'm sure, that will want to hold off until we start up again in August. But I really must say that, you know, everybody's really excited about the possibility of getting back to face-to-face as soon as possible.
Now, as far as athletics are concerned, how does the spring semester look right now? And here again, you're hoping that things will be more back to normal by the time fall comes. How about the spring semester sports? What are they going to be doing as far as you know right now?
Yeah, so men's and women's basketball just started. They started after the first of the year. Because most of the people in our conference are in Michigan, and Michigan has some more stringent rules, you know, we have to do more testing of the student athletes if they're going to be competing in Michigan. So that has had some impact. But the other and most important part about this upcoming semester is that those sports that were canceled in the fall, like volleyball, for example, will be playing in the spring this semester. So we're doubling up a lot of things in this next semester that we didn't do before. And, of course, you know, we've kept the number of competitions down to the minimum. And we've changed the way we're doing things a little bit. For example, basketball, they don't usually play back-to-back, but under the circumstances, we're now usually playing a game like on Friday night and then the same team on Saturday,
right,
to be able to limit the amount of travel and limit the amount of interaction. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, we can't have any fans.
Well, that's one of the prices we're all paying. The pros have to call off the fans, and it's certainly the case for county and for college games as well, too. We just have to deal with, I guess, for now. If you will, Chancellor King, give us a general assessment on the impact that the, at least certainly for on your behalf for Purdue University Northwest, the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on higher education. You mentioned that at the start of our conversation that it may be tougher on some students who are struggling at best, I guess, and trying to keep up. But do you think that overall it's going to be the case for everybody?
Generally, what I'm reading is that there's really a national trend for people not to have as many transfer students as usual. You know, so for example, we normally would have a number of young people from Northwest Indiana that would go to one of the residential campuses and for some reason feel uncomfortable or not do as well as they would like. And generally after the first semester, they would transfer to us. Those students, you know, are getting some kind of grade forgiveness this year, and so those transfers are down.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's happening, particularly for the students who are first-generation students, we're finding a lot of the freshmen are not coming back at the rate that they normally would. So, you know, every year we lose some students between fall and spring. Generally, that's about 10%. And this semester, it looks like it's going to be more like 15 or 16%. And those are the kind of things that are happening with all of the universities across the Midwest.
So we're just finding that these problems that have come up that have discovered, of course, as a result of the coronavirus pandemic are there for everybody. And just hoping that things will get better for fall semester, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, the other level of uncertainty to us is, you know, what the state is going to decide to do about state funding. They asked us this year to put together a budget that would look like we would have a 7% decrease in state funding. So now we're waiting for the state legislature over the next 2 or 3 months to decide what's going to happen with our funding for next year. So as we look at contingency planning, you know, there is a big hole that still might be able to be popping up if the state decides to cut funding any further or if they don't bring us back to our normal mm-hmm. funding level.
So I just, I guess, hope every, and you're a fellow colleagues at other universities, not only around Northwest Indiana, but around the state, are probably hoping the same, too, that they will be able to get caught up and not drag too far behind. Well, Chancellor Keehan, thank you for spending time with us talking about Purdue University Northwest and how it's been dealing with the pandemic and going through and now into the spring semester 2021. And we hope to hear back from you again soon. Thank you very much today.
Okay, thank you, Chris. It's always a pleasure.
This is Bridger Lee speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The state of Indiana has now moved into Phase 1B, as they're calling it, of the vaccine rollout. So now seniors 80 and over can be able to make their appointments to receive the COVID-19 vaccine. Tell us more about some of the health care providers in Northwest Indiana making that available. We have Robert Blaskowitz. He's a spokesman for Franciscan Health Northern Division. And Robert, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Chris.
Tell us a little bit more about how Franciscan Health has gotten set up and ready to take appointments to be able to inoculate people.
Certainly. Well, when vaccines began to be approved, the state designated our three of our Northwest Indiana hospitals, Franciscan Health Hammond, Crown Point, and Michigan City, as vaccination sites. So we began December 18th to vaccinate, focusing, of course, on frontline healthcare workers. And then, as you noted, on Friday, we moved into Phase 1B of the vaccine rollout. And so we are now vaccinating members of the community age 80 and above.
Now, if you will, give us an outline on how the procedure is going to be here. In trying to get appointments set up, there's a reason mm-hmm. that we're asking for appointments rather than just letting people come in the door, so to speak, and receive the vaccination. There are reasons why you have to make an appointment. Will you fill us in on that first?
Well, correct. We don't want people to have to wait in lines. Obviously, this is a pandemic, so we don't want people waiting long for long times and in closed spaces. And so what we want to do is get people through the process as quickly as possible. And then really, you know, thanks to the scheduling, it only takes a matter of minutes to come in and actually get the vaccination. After that, we invite people to wait. We ask them to wait about 15 minutes or so, just to make sure that there's no reactions, that everything is going okay. And thus far, we really haven't had anyone at any of our hospitals with any severe reactions from the vaccine.
That's very good. That's very good to hear, to be sure. Now, since you get two inoculations, two shots, you get the first one when you make your appointment and get your first vaccination. What's the procedure for the second dose that you have to have?
Yeah, when you come in for your first vaccination, we will make an appointment. We will set up your appointment for your second, so that you're assured of doing that. The schedule right now, there's two vaccines that we're providing, a Pfizer vaccine. The second dose is 3 weeks after the first. And for the Moderna vaccine, the second dose is 4 weeks later. So that's all set up. And I should note that the initial, for those looking to get vaccinated, it's done through the state's website. We're facilitating the vaccinations, but it's all being done through the state's website, which is www.rshot.in.gov.
Now, I understand that Franciscan Health is also still providing a vaccine for frontline healthcare workers and some of the other people who had been mentioned earlier in the procedure.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. And frontline healthcare workers and first responders as well have been mm-hmm. included in that as well.
Now we know the state's going ahead into phase 1B, so now that senior citizens age 80 and over can make their appointments and receive their vaccination. What's the procedure next? Who would be next in line to be able to receive them?
Well, I'll defer to the state, but I know that they're basing their decisions on trying their best to reduce hospitalization and reduce deaths. So seeing this population as those most likely to end up in the hospital or end up with a fatal case of COVID, I think that's what is driving their decisions. But really, it's up to the state to decide where they go next with this.
Now, if you will give us that website again, that the people that want to make appointments, either for themselves or family members that want to make appointments for their loved ones, where do they go to be able to make the appointment for the vaccination?
Yes, the website is rshot, rshot.in.gov. And if they don't have internet access or they have trouble getting on the site, they can also call 211.
Robert Blaskowitz is the spokesperson for Franciscan Health Northern Division, and he's based here out of Crown Point. And thank you very much, Robert, for the update. And we hope that everybody that wants to take advantage of these vaccinations can do so.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversations to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
When you have a community that is not as diverse, then everyone loses because you don't have that experience with people who don't look like you, and you believe that everything should be a certain way, and that's ultimately what happened in Gary. When there was massive white flight, which was in the mid to late 60s, early 70s, there were many homes that were abandoned. And really more than that, because they didn't really abandon them, they sold them. But they sold them at a lower rate. And what happened was that there were a lot of folks who were able to purchase homes who could not maintain them. And so that sort of led to the compromise of the housing stock in the city of Gary. I had a neighbor down the street from where I live. She moved to Schererville. She walked away from her house, got a new mortgage in Schererville, and just walked away from her house, locked the door. And the impact and the thing that really kind of drives me crazy is that then, because it was a foreclosure, they have this fire sale and say that there's a house on sale for $15,000, which has a direct impact on me and my neighbor's property values. So let's say I want to move to a different area in Gary, or let's say one of my neighbors wants to retire and move to Florida, one of our other neighbors. The sale of that distressed property, the sale of that foreclosed property, would serve as a comp or a comparable for any other appraisal that was done of my house, of the neighbor's house, of anybody's house in that area. And so as a result, it would push down our property values, even though our mortgages were paid up, even though we were doing everything we were supposed to do. And so things like that really frustrate those of us who are taking care of our property, who are working hard every day, and who have really made a life for ourselves and our families in Gary. The reason that I came back to Gary was that there were so many teachers, both in school and Sunday school, so many members of the community who took the time to inspire me. And so my theory is that if all of us who receive that inspiration move to other communities and decide, well, Gary is to this or Gary is to that, then who's going to inspire the next generation? And in some instances, I understand why people move. They move because they can. But my position has always been, and I've been very deliberate in where I lived in the city, that it was very important for all of us to live together so that children, our neighbors and other neighbors, could see people who were professional, who were doing important things on their block, and they could have a sense I can be like them. That's what I had. I lived next door to teachers. I knew that I could be a teacher. I lived across the street from a guy who worked in the post office. I knew that I could work in the post office. I lived across the street from a nurse, from a general contractor. I knew I could do all of those things. Even though my parents, you know, they worked and they didn't necessarily have their own business. They weren't lawyers or doctors. Neither of them had completed college. But because of the neighbors that I lived around, I understood what I could do. And I had a clear sense that the sky was the limit.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.